Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 88 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBTQQS version of Conversation Radio. That's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, questioning, and straight. It's exclusively on listener-supported head-on radio network. Bob was talking earlier in the evening about our goals for this month, the financial goals. Apparently, we've reached about $2,000. We have a $3,500 goal this month. It's important to help keep the studio with packets passing and streams streaming and bumpers playing and guests speaking. One of the projects that we're doing at the network, and we hope to have it online fairly soon, is the new main computer, which will enable us to begin developing some video capabilities. I've seen the future, and it is us. The studio is the new system we have set up is really quite an amazing system, but it wasn't that inexpensive, really. But Bob and I saved a ton of it by putting it together ourselves. It's a dual core AMD system, and it will really work smoothly. Example, right now on my machine, I'm speaking to you. I'm running Microsoft Word, several occurrences of the internet. I'm running email. Nero record code is burning a DVD. All sorts of things are going on, and I'm barely hitting 10% processor, and I have a dual core. So this is really what the studio needs, because we are maxing out those computers badly, and your help is appreciated. Please stop by headonradionetwork.com. That's headonradionetwork.com, and you'll see a PayPal button located in the right-hand column. You have to scroll to the right to see it, so it's a wide page. But it's headonradionetwork.com. You'll see the PayPal button if you could help us out this month. That's wonderful. And, reminder, only 6 days left in the war on Christmas. We're accused of the war on Christmas every single year, and I would like for this year to be the last year. Remember, kill a tree before it kills you. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, December the 18th. And if you are listening on a Tuesday evening, a little bit after 9 p.m., that's December the 18th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in. Our guest will be joining us about 9:15. This particular guest, I've got to tell you, has been a guest before on the Head On Radio Network. He appeared back on October the 4th. If you'd like to go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the October calendar, you can hear his previous appearance on the Head On Radio Network. This tonight, and I'll tell you his name when it's time for him to come on. Tonight is special. I got to tell you, Christmas is a difficult time of year, is it not? Especially when you've just about given up on Christmas miracles, and the right wing is beating you about the head, and looks like the fundamentalists are going to run a real live, honest to God Baptist preacher as their presidential candidate. In fact, at some point this evening, I hope to get back to the why I think Huckabee is the devil, not the Antichrist, not an evil minion, not one of the little demons, I think, the devil himself, but I'll get into that later in the show. But in any case, our guest this evening will be telling us about what I consider to be a wonderful occurrence to happen at Christmas time, and it almost restores my faith. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to the guests, as well as the audio archives from past shows, and you'll find links to the chat room, which is active as we speak. You'll find links there to Head On Radio Network's main site, where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877, the number 4, Head On. Or if you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And it rings in West Virginia. Christmas is a difficult time of year, is it not? Sunday mornings are especially difficult for me because on Sunday mornings I have so many commitments down at the Methodist Church here, which is Southern Methodist University, as I've ranted all before. I have some new stories about that, is soon to become the home of the George W. Bush Presidential Library, which irks me to the absolute core of my bones. I find it very difficult to stay involved in an organization that would reach down low enough to lift up a man like that, and it's all for money. The regents at the it's being kept a top secret. They kept it from the Methodist congregation for quite a long time. It's been in the works since about 2002, and the White House is refusing to release the name of the university or the location of the library. But it's a done deal. It has been a done deal. They're just afraid of all the outrage that will come pouring from the people of the Methodist Church who don't already are not already aware of it. So in any case, I got to tell you, poor Bob. I sent Bob a flaming email. I was all stressed out. I'm going to get out of the church. They're going to start talking about the war on Christmas, and Walmart's not saying Merry Christmas, and the Bush Presidential Library. So what did I do Sunday morning? I sent this huge flaming email to Bob. I was ranting about production chat or some rigmarole. I don't know what. In any case, poor Bob, between the plumbing problems and a host meltdown on Sunday, oh, Lord, poor Agnes and Bob. But anyway, I've got to make a few changes along those lines, and I will get out of this stress church. But I just have a lot of commitments down there that I need to do. And speaking of the Bush Presidential Library, let me tell you that story. The Dallas News has now released the fact that millions and millions of records and photographs and artifacts and the whole bit tracing the presidency of George W. Bush are going to be moving from the White House to a North Texas warehouse by early 2009 under a recently awarded government contract. Now, this warehouse is going to be in a place called Louisville, Texas. It's located at Lake Point Drive. And it is just a stone's throw away from Southern Methodist University. Just another major clue to let you know that, yes, in fact, it is a done deal. We're only waiting for the announcement. They're going to be building space there. They have committed to a six-year, $12.7 million contract that's going to turn the 1725 Lake Point Drive into a huge place of organizing and cataloging what they refer to as the massive cache of presidential materials before they move into the permanent library. Now, the contract is being overseen by the National Archives and Records Administration, and, you knew it was coming. They had to bring up Clinton. Now, I mean, in spite of the fact that the Bush administration has conveniently deleted over 5 million emails, which we'll never see again, which have which directly link the Bush administration's to high crime and misdemeanors. Despite that fact, there's this paragraph. It is expected that the collection will be greater than Clinton's, which consisted of over 30,000 cubic feet of textual and non-textual holdings, the archive spokeswoman Susan Cooper said. She also said the electronic component will also be greater than the Clinton administration's holding. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? Even in the Bush Library, they're still managing to dredge up Clinton. It is an amazing thing to me. Clinton is mentioned again, saying that when Clinton got together his materials from the White House, that he had to rent an old car dealership that had failed. And they use all the space inside the car dealership there to catalog and coordinate his records. But the Bush Library will be building a brand new facility, and what they will do is rotate records in and out of the facility into the Bush Library, which will no doubt be located at Southern Methodist University, and it closes with discussions with Southern Methodist University continue. We have not announced a specific timetable. Our goal is to make the announcement soon. Well, the goal to make the announcement soon is several months old. In fact, only the masses don't know. Only the listeners of the Head On Radio Network and a few select others seem to even realize this whole debacle is going on. But nonetheless, it is, in fact, going on. Let's see. Bob has a guest on the line. That's great. And we'll go ahead and bring the guest on. Then the our guest this evening, and we have a bit of a Christmas miracle for you, is the Reverend Bruce Simpson, the Archbishop Bruce Simpson. And to tell you a bit about him, he was born in New Jersey, and at 18 he enlisted in the United States Army, or rather the Air Force. That was during Vietnam. And he was assigned to nuclear security. He received an honorable discharge and went to work in Reading, Pennsylvania, and received an undergraduate degree in the legal field from the University of Central Florida. And he left in 1984 to go to St. Mary's Seminary, and after leaving the seminary in 86, he served as a bodyguard to the Saudi Arabian royal family. Now, that's a show in itself, but that's not where we're going this evening. He's received various awards from the Secretary of the Treasury and the Vice President of the United States, and he's even received one award, including one for conducting a briefing session with senior Russian government officials. He is also the Archbishop of the Benedictine Order of St. John the Beloved. That's the Benedictine Order of St. John the Beloved. You can locate his website. The website by going to osjtb.org. That's osjtb.org, and that stands for the Benedictine Order of St. John the Beloved. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Peter?
Yes, sir, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, thanks.
Excellent. Bruce, I'm thrilled to have you with us again this evening. I always look forward to our conversations with such great anticipation, and you have such good news.
Yes, thank you for having me on your show again. First, a quick comment on your comments regarding the Bush Library. You realize, of course, that it takes a lot of room to store the multiple copies of My Pet Goat that's accumulated in the White House over the years, because I understand George likes to color in them. As he reads, so you know, there's a lot of copies, and that's going to take up a lot of room.
there's no doubt. Yes,
no doubt.
Just floors me.
But I got some rather good news last night that we have a donor in Florida, in fact, west of you, who is going to donate 5 acres of land for us, upon which to build our monastery, our small church for the monastery, and our retreat center. And this is good news. I've been searching for this for 9 years as Bishop of the Order, and it is coming through. And I should receive papers next week. The transfer will take a few months in 2008 to complete. And so it looks like our home is going to be in Florida.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear this. And, in fact, when you were on the show previously, you made the remark that wouldn't it be nice if some rich philanthropist would suddenly drop millions of dollars into your lap, but it looks like God's working it a little different way.
He is. I guess we're going to get a piecemeal, which is fine by me. I'll take it any way I can get it. As the project is laid out on our website, the land was the first step of the process, and now that has finally been completed, and or will be completed soon. And the donor wishes to remain anonymous, and at this point I'm restricted from making any comments that might identify either the donor or the land involved, but as I say, it is west of you. There in Tallahassee, but probably close enough where I might be able to pop on your show as a in-house guest one night.
Well,
things are looking up, and now I have to start on phase two of the project, which is to locate either that millionaire that we're looking for, or just as good would be a building contractor who would be willing to donate the construction of the buildings in exchange for what I assume would be extensive tax breaks for them. And that's the only thing that's going to hold us up getting moving is to get the buildings built. Once they're built, I'll take up residence in them.
Well, I have to say it's just an amazing find. Without saying where it is, I think I can safely say it's a little bit remote, but it's not really remote. Apparently, there's what, a couple of hotels right there. How does this property work?
The general area is going to be right now is uninhabited. Later on, as we go on into next year, there will be in other parts of the property there'll be commercial enterprises. That aren't connected, of course, with the monastery. But that's all up to the group of businessmen who own all that. The interesting thing is how I came across the donor is through online in-game chat on a military video war game.
You're kidding me.
Which I... I've kind of it's called Battlefield 2, and I struck up a friendship with this individual, and we spent many hours talking while we've been playing the game, and he got into what I'm about and read my book, and then offered to donate the land, and so through a game of violence, essentially, will come the foundation for a complex that represents the peace and love of Christ.
Well, tell us what you have in mind for the buildings. And I realize we're looking for some donors for that. How many buildings will they be, and the size, and what is your vision?
The entire project, 3 buildings. And the first building is the monastery house itself that need to be... to be big enough to have 10 to 12 people on a permanent basis, and through there we'll rotate clergy for training purposes, and it'll always be the mother house where they can come back to for rest and retreat. And then next to that will be a small church, nothing humongous, nothing garish by any means, with a walkway between the church and the monastery, and then the church will be a public parish as well, and it will also serve as the church for the monastery. And the third and final building will be a retreat center, which will be able to house, at current planning, up to 20 people for a retreat. And then this then will become the source of income for the order, because retreats are a big business in this country. Some retreat houses, you have to make reservations a year in advance. So this will then operate the retreat center as a ministry as well as a income source, because the money to pay the monthly electric bill has got to come from somewhere, along with my responsibilities as bishop to the clergy, insuring them and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the 3 building structure of the complex, and then of course parking for X number of vehicles, whatever the zoning requires for what we're planning. But in a nutshell, that's kind of it.
Archbishop Simpson, some of the listeners, no doubt, didn't hear your previous show, so there may be some people who are scratching their heads wondering why the Catholic Church is looking for donations when the Catholic Church is known to have lots and lots of money. And perhaps if you could give us an explanation, just a general overview of the difference between the old Catholics, which I believe you are, in the Catholic Church as a whole.
Right. We're one of the branches of the Catholic Church. There's actually like 5 branches. Roman Catholicism is one of the branches. Russians, the Greeks, the Orthodox, the Eastern, and the Old Catholics are the other branches. We broke off from Rome in 1889 when the bishops of the Netherlands issued what's called the Declaration of Utrecht, Utrecht being a city in Holland where the Archbishop of the Old Catholic Church is seated. And they broke off from Rome over controversies that were instituted during Vatican I, one of which being the doctrine of papal infallibility, which is not part of the original depositive faith of the Church. And the other two issues, one is called the Filioque, which is how the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father and the Son, or just the Father, which is kind of how many angels dance on the head of a pin, in some respects, to me today, in this day and age. But in 1889, it was very important to them. And then the third is the Immaculate Conception of Mary, not of Jesus, but of Mary. Vatican I promulgated the doctrine that Mary was immaculately conceived without sin. And, of course, these three things are nowhere in the first 1,000 years of the Church, the depository of faith. And it was enough for the bishops to throw up their hands and say, you know, that's it. We are no longer going to report to Rome, basically. Rome would say we are in schism with them, or a schismatic church, meaning that we have broken away, which we have. But the bishops took with them all the apostolic succession, the same sacraments, all the elements and fundamentals of the Roman Church, of course, came with them. I'm in valid apostolic succession as much as the Pope is. And that means my lineage can be traced back through consecrating bishops as far back as any Roman can. And my consecrating bishop happened to be Bishop Dominic Martin and others. And he passed his lineage on to me from those that passed it on to him. And then any priest that I consecrate or ordain received that succession from me. So basically, that's the logical differences. They do have all the money. We have none of it. The old Catholics have always been pretty poor. The Benedictine Order of St. John the Beloved is the oldest old Catholic order in the United States. We celebrate our centennial next year. And the order has always struggled because we've always been involved in ministries that do not generate income. The majority of my clergy are go to nursing homes and hospices, which have become more and more isolated from Roman clergy, not because Rome has lost interest, but because Rome doesn't have the people. So my guys step in and they, you know, take up that workload. I won't allow a plate to be passed in a nursing home or hospice. I think that's bad form, and that's not why we're there. So that hurts us in that all those people that we serve, you know, we don't get donations from. We opened a parish in Port St. Lucie, Florida, about, I want to say, 6 months ago, and that's functioning there. And we'll see how that goes. That's kind of it in the nutshell as far as differences and likenesses go.
Well, would you say that the situation between yourselves and the Catholic Church is sort of a agree to disagree, or is it an ongoing war?
Well, no, I can't say it's an ongoing war. There are battles that flare up that sometimes I get involved in and sometimes I don't have to. For example, in the county that Port St. Lucie is in, a priest of mine went to a nursing home to give the last rites to somebody who was dying and then died shortly thereafter. And a Roman Catholic priest came in a few days later and said that my guy wasn't valid and that the parishioner never received the last rites, which was a horrible thing to tell the family, and it was also totally incorrect. And I got on the phone to the Roman Catholic bishop of that diocese and said, you know, you need to take steps to correct this or we're going to have a PR war on our hands and all this is going to come out in the media.
That's an awful thing to tell a family. Yeah.
It absolutely was. And it was ignorant. And this was a young Roman priest, so he'd only been out of seminary 2 or 3 years, I believe. And simply didn't know his church history like he should have. You know, a lot of guys in Rome think that they are the world. And having been part of the Roman system in the seminary and been close to the power of elite of Rome for time being, I very much know how some of them think. So to the credit of the bishop down there, he rectified the situation immediately. An apology was issued to me and to the family and to the priest involved, my priest, and the Roman priest was transferred.
Well, Archbishop Simpson, I'm wondering, how many people do you think will actually live at the facility? Will you have a large number of people coming from all over the country to actually live there?
Well, the monastery, I'm planning on 10 permanent residents, and they can come from anywhere around the country. To plan for a larger facility, I think is economically unfeasible, because we're going to have a hard enough time getting the facility built for just 10 permanent people. The way it's going to be set up is, if we get fortunate and there's excess cash, we can always expand the monastery, so it can be added on to. But I think to start out, we're going to start out with what I think meets the current needs, and we'll take it from there. I'll probably have a professor of theology on site who will live there. The individual I have in mind was educated at the Louvain Seminary in Belgium, and there'll be other permanent residents as well. Also, my partner and I will reside there as well.
Well, regarding the retreat center, and understand that will be hopefully a source of some reliable income, will that be open to, for instance, nonprofit agencies like, area? Tallahassee is just filled with various associations regarding everything from hotels to counties to aging. Or is it just for religious groups?
No. We're going to not have any restrictions on who can use the facility. Priority will be given to religious retreats as the requests come in. It will not be restricted to Catholics. Any faith will be able to book the retreat center. And if we run into a period where we have no religious retreats booked, then we will open it up to corporate-type retreats. There's no reason why the two can't coexist together in the facility, the two premises. And the idea is to try to keep that source of income flowing.
Archbishop, do you intend to run a full food service there to serve all the meals for these retreats? How ambitious is it? You're going to have a full commercial kitchen?
Well, the plans are, which is the way a lot of retreat centers are run, there will be a full kitchen in there, and they will have the option of bringing their own food, preparing their own meals, or I will have a chef do it, which would obviously cost them more money to do that. But that service will be available. And so it's really up to the retreat groups how they want to do it. I find in the past a lot of groups like that process of gathering and cooking the community meal together, everybody doing a little part of it. And then there are other groups that just want to go there for whatever they're there for, and they don't want to be bothered with the kitchen. And that's fine. As they say, we'll provide that service, but it'll be at an increased cost.
Have you seen photographs of the property?
I have seen satellite photos, actually. I have seen the topographical maps and that sort of thing. So I have not physically been there, but I've been as close as you can get, thanks to Google.
Yes. Well, after all, it only happened last evening. How? And I understand there's a huge stocked pond or lake there on the property. Is that right?
There's lakes throughout that part of the panhandle, and there is one on the property, and there'll be fishing available, and our retreatants will be able to have access to it once everything's completed. So I expect that when it all comes together, it should be quite nice. And beyond that, I am restricted from really saying much more, but I'm pleased that it's in Florida. I mean, I'm returning in a sense, since that's where I got my undergraduate degree and ran for public office in Florida. So in many ways, it's coming back home.
Well, I think it's I just think it's astounding. And what are you concerned at all about the political environment in North Florida? It's a soon to be developed, but still kind of what you'd call a rural area.
No. I 6 months ago or 4 months ago, I was in Fort Lauderdale tangling with 30 Baptist right-wing ministers. The area, while it may be conservative in nature, we're still a church, and you know, we will deal diplomatically and cordially with all of our neighbors, and those who do not want to be friendly are welcome to stay to themselves, as we will. But no, I have no concerns about that whatsoever.
Well, I have to tell you, without naming the place, I have been through that area. It's a long story about how I was in that area, in that particular neck of the woods, but nonetheless, I was there. The places that I saw, and it seemed to be universal, it was heavily wooded with huge oak trees, mm-hmm. and, you know, the moss, the whole bit, and you're right, there were a number of lakes in the area, and some of the property actually, you know, goes up to the actual lakes, and the huge lakes, lily pads, you know, the whole, you know, southern sort of a scene there, and
right.
It was really quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've been able to tell from what I've been able to see, and also from the description of the current owners. And I think it's going to be an ideal situation. I think the weather also is more to my liking in that part of Florida than down south. I don't tolerate humidity all that well. but I'm looking forward to adjusting to the weather in that area. It's as you say, a bit rural, but I also know of some of the future plans for that region, and part of those plans include a new airport. So people will be able to get in and out with very little difficulty.
Yeah, between, I won't say the cities, but between the two major cities where we're talking about, there are really no airports. That's great news. That's great news.
Yes. Now, you live in Florida, Peter. You should know that.
Yeah. Yes, I've been here a long time.
And I understand you said you're going to leave your church. I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, I've started attending another church. I've started going to the evening services of the Metropolitan Community Church here. And the thing is, Bruce, I've been involved in the Methodist Church since I was just a kid. And, you know, used to go to Sunday school there, and I remember, you know, being a little boy there, the whole bit, all the way through time. So, in a way, I feel it, and one of the reasons I'm delaying is because I feel it as a sense of loss also.
Yes.
By the same token, though, you know, I deal with the, you know, I usually by biting my tongue a bit, but I, you know, like, for instance, last Sunday, the guy doing the Sunday school thing was starting off with, how schools are trying to deal with the fact that evolution isn't real, and you know we're going to start, you know, the whole, you know the whole spiel, and
yeah.
And this, but I feel in my heart that the thing about the Bush Library is just the last straw. I don't see how I can continue to be associated with an organization that has the Bush Library at its leading educational facility. It just galls me to such a degree.
Yes, I followed that since the word first leaked out about it, and I have to say I concur with you totally. And I do think it's a matter of dollars as one of the motivators for offering their campus up to the library. And as I say, there's only going to be one book in it, but if that's what they want. And I've been to the Bill Clinton Library, and as a matter of fact, I wrote a piece for The Advocate about my trip there, and I was very moved by what I saw in there, including a framed picture of Matthew Shepard in one of the cases.
Really?
I don't think we'll find pictures of Matt Shepard in Bush's library. If anything, it'll be a hanging photo of Saddam Hussein.
It's disturbing. I was just about to say that the library and the think tank that goes along with it is really overwhelming. And as far as I understand, that the Southern Methodist University will have no control over the think tank whatsoever, and its primary purpose in life is to rewrite history.
Well, I agree with you, and they've already started doing that in some instances. And I think Cheney's behind a good part of that. And it's really a tragic situation that the church has chosen to involve itself into that kind of a controversy, because ultimately I think it's going to hurt them. You know, they should have done what Clinton did, which was he put up his own building separate. It's on a beautiful little piece of land alongside a river. The architectural style I could have, you know, left without, you know, seeing, but that's what
they yeah, right.
put it up. You know, it looks kind of like Noah's Ark, a modern version of Noah's Ark, but be it as it may, you know, they didn't put it in an institutional, an education institution like the Bushes are doing. And again, I think that sooner or later the Methodist Church will regret that.
I can't see how they couldn't. I can't see how they couldn't. As history, the truth always eventually comes out, regardless. Time and truth have a way of merging at some point later down the road. And
absolutely.
And the depth of corruption and what has happened with this administration will not remain secret. And if it doesn't damage the church immediately, it will at some point. I can practically guarantee you.
Well, I feel so strong about it that I'm running for delegate to the Democratic National Convention early next month. We've announced my candidacy now, and I've got to go through this process of petitions and signatures and then get on the primary ballot. But if everything works out right, I'll be going to Denver to help nominate the next president of the United States.
Is that a fact? And Denver is in many ways the heart of the beast, you know, what with Focus on the Family and all the other organizations. Yeah, that's a great thing to do that, Denver.
Indeed, yep. And now, of course, I have to stress that I'll be running and functioning as me as a private person, because but not as Archbishop of the Order, because that would violate IRS regs. But I can run as me myself. Me, myself, and I can run. And that's what I'm going to do. I've already attended the training session and all that. And I'm looking forward to the campaign and to getting forward and like I said, helping to elect the next president, because I swear to he above that if another whack job gets into the White House like Huckabee, I'm going to give up on this country.
Well, you know, I was saying that just the other evening in our Head On Radio Network chat that if we get another one, I can't even remain in the Methodist Church. I don't even think I can remain in the country. It is unbelievable.
It is, and if somebody like Huckabee, I think would, you know, somebody who talks to God at nighttime and, you know, gets his marching orders, we've seen what that's gotten us into and what's happened to our country. I already know I qualify for immigration to Canada. I might have to look at that if Huckabee gets in. But I honestly, Peter, I don't think, I think the American people will finally have enough. I think that intelligence is going to win out. It only took 8 years, but I really don't believe that a Republican will be in the White House in 2009.
Well, I can't fathom it either. I can't wrap my head around it happening. But I do have to say that with Huckabee becoming the current darling, which is what I'm seeing, and him being a Southern Baptist minister, and the South being completely infested with Southern Baptist churches in every corner, plus the fact, Archbishop, they've finally gotten to 611,000 signatures to put the marriage amendment back up in Florida, and the general consent, yes, sir, and the general consensus is that it's being done specifically to draw out the voters in Florida. They're pulling all the same tricks. They really are.
Well, I mean, Rove might be out of the West Wing, but he's definitely not out of the picture. He's pulling the strings in Alabama right now in what's going on there, and he will be very much involved in the presidential campaign behind the curtains, even more so than he was before. But his kind of tactics are going to be continued to be utilized to try to steer the presidency back into the right and into the conservative vein. And I think, you know, that's a double-edged sword, Peter. They can use a wedge issue like gay marriage to bring out all the Republicans, but it also, I think, is time that the Democrats realize that they have to turn out in equal numbers, if not greater numbers, to vote in that kind of election. And they would have been far better off trying to use that device, I think, in an off-year election than in a presidential election, because I think the country's truly fed up. I also think Florida has a bit of a guilt complex over 2000, and I think that there'll be extraordinary measures taken to make sure that the vote's done right and counted right this time.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, truly, the country can't endure another theocracy presidency. In fact, every institution is just about completely torn down funding for aging and funding for HIV, funding for disabled. It's in every social program. It's survival of the fittest with these people. Yep. It's just amazing. There's no social consciousness whatsoever.
No, it's all been siphoned off and put into the war machine. And with all that money and energy, Bush still has managed to break the war machine. Our military is in sad shape. Suicides within the ranks are at the highest level since Vietnam. Desertion rate is as high as level as Vietnam. And we're turning a certain portion of our young men and women into monsters. These guys, girls, are going to come home, and they're going to end up on the streets of this nation. And the fact that the VA is not treating traumatic brain injury is a deeply disturbing aspect of this war, because it is going to put people onto our streets who are brain damaged, untreated, and possibly violent. And
a very good point.
Sole responsibility for this is the VA and George Bush. At last estimate, there are 110,000 unreported brain injuries. And these are people, especially if the National Guard troops, these are people who are cops and firemen and doctors. Do we really want our police officers coming back from Iraq, had a particularly terrible time there, and then going back onto our streets?
Well,
what happens when, and I'm speaking from experience here, having been close to a police officer who spent a tour in Iraq, and I was with him pretty constantly the first couple of weeks he was back, and he even drove like he was still in Baghdad. And I would say to him, you're not in Baghdad anymore. You can't go up over the curb with this truck.
Oh,
so somebody blocked the driveway. He, to this day, cannot go to the movies on a weekend because it's too crowded. He can't get around crowds. And the man is a police officer.
Wow.
You know, we are doing terrible things to the psyche of our people. It's been too long, too many tours, too much separation from civilization, from their families. And, the Republicans just don't give a damn. They don't care.
Well,
as long as they're carrying out this warped policy, this imperialistic war policy, they don't care what we're doing to the youth of this nation. You know, and I think just today I read the story of a patrol in Baghdad where a first sergeant of a platoon, family man, everybody loved him. They were out on patrol. The sergeant fired his weapon in the air and said, "I can't take it anymore," and put the gun under his chin and blew his head off.
My stars. I didn't know that.
Yep. And his driver got on the radio and said, Apache 7 has just killed himself. And he just kept saying that over and over again. And it's caused quite a stir over there. That story should be on the 6 o'clock news. And yet I had to find it on a website and not on the national news. This is what we're doing to our military. You know, so with all that money and everything that's been sucked out of all the programs that people's lives depend on and put in the military, they still even bungled everything from A to Z. It's incomprehensible the damage that this administration has done to this country and to our image in the world.
It is. It is. It's incomprehensible. It's the perfect word. And yet I still hear from time to time from the right fundamentalists that they still believe that Bush is a man of God. That's a direct quote. I heard it here in this very little county not very long ago. Godspeed the truth, because it's hard to take.
Well, he must be talking about the god Zeus, because it's not the creator in heaven that, that George Bush is a man of. I've never seen such destruction in our country. And recall, I worked at a senior level in our government during Bill Clinton's administration, and, you know, infrequently, but still, I would have contact with the White House, and I saw the workings of the higher level of government, and there was a whole different attitude then. There was the attitude, we can do this, we can do it better, we can even do it better by maybe not spending as many tax dollars. And Vice President Gore used to give out an award called the Hammer Award. And that award was for reinventing government. Reinventing it as in taking a task, doing it better, and having it cost less. And you think Cheney's involved with something like that today? No, he's stuck in an undisclosed location mapping out the next war.
This is true. Yes, and regardless of the assessments that are coming out, he seems deadly intent on it. And the amount of arrogance that he shows to social service agencies. We recently had a guest on representing the eight communities that are organizations that help with the elderly. And every 10 years, there's a sort of a mega conference where area agencies on aging from all the different stripes from all over the country come together for a huge meeting in Washington, D.C., and the whole point is a sort of a state of the union about what's happening with aging in the United States. And traditionally, it's always the president's been there, the vice president that spoke, and they were completely shunned. Even the elderly are just horrified by this.
Yes, well, I'm hoping that the elderly remember this on Election Day, you know, and that they respond to this kind of arrogance and lack of care through the voting machine, and that we have something in place to make sure that the votes cast are actually the votes that are counted.
Amen.
Because I honest to God, I've fought for this country. I've taken the oath of office to protect and defend and all that stuff. I honestly believe that this current administration would do anything to keep its ideology in power. Maybe not the current people, because, you know, thankfully the Constitution says two and they're out, but the ideology that they represent, they're committed to make that continue, whether it's through the Federalist Club, through the judges that they've got in place now throughout the system, from the Supreme Court on down, or through any of the other mechanisms that power is, the levers of power are pulled. I don't trust them to not be involved in shenanigans to manipulate the vote. Just tonight I saw an internet news story on the fact that Huckabee's campaign people are robocalling in New Hampshire. And that's a big no-no. And Huckabee knows it, and his people know it, and yet they're doing it. And that's where your phone rings, and you pick up the phone, and you've got a computer talking to you about Huckabee. That policy, the rules governing that say you can't do that. Well, Huckabee's doing it.
Interesting.
So, you know, already we're 11 months away from even counting the first vote, and they're already starting to bend and can the rule.
Right. Well, recently within the last year, the story came out that I believe it was in Ohio, there was an organization actually with physical people calling to get out the vote for the Democrats. And what happened was the Republicans had hired a whole robo-calling center simply to call all of their lines and keep them blocked. High-ranking officials in the Ohio election system have been charged with felonies and are doing all this. But it's never the Ohio election was stolen too. But it's not in the mainstream news. Never.
Right. I agree that Ohio was finagled into Bush's column, and I am fairly confident when I say that he took two elections rather than he won two elections. Now, he got appointed the first time, and then he stole the second time. And that's what we can't have next year. We've got to return to open, free elections in this country, or we're no longer a democracy or a republic. We are no better than a tin horn dictatorship out of South America. And even there, I don't think there's that many left. We've got to return the rule of law to the people. And that same rule of law needs to be applied across the board, including protections for gay and lesbian people. And I'm deeply saddened that the Hate Crimes Act seems to have failed. I personally lobbied in Washington on behalf of HRC for that. I met with senators and congresspeople lobbying for the passage. And everybody was nervous about it, but they had basically committed, except one Florida congressman, to supporting it. And it passed the House, as we know. But it's going down in flames in the Senate. And I think part of that's due to the incompetency of Senator Reid, who held great promise in the beginning, but has clearly showed himself not up to the task of leadership in the Senate.
Yes. Yes, there's scandals that are knee-deep. Archbishop Simpson, I'm trying to remember when you were on the show before if I brought up the Institute on Religion and Democracy. It's something that I beat on from time to time, and I don't know if I mentioned it to you or not. And if so, I'm wondering if you could give us some thoughts about that. It's my take on it and what I have said on this program is it is a longstanding, privately well-funded organization to devote the church to the government rather than to the word of Christ.
No, we didn't talk about that last time, and this appears to be one organization that slipped under my radar. What's the name of it again?
The Institute on Religion and Democracy. It's called the IRD. And, in fact, there's a book out called Hardball on Holy Ground that I don't have. And I don't have that one in front of me, but the other is called Steeplejacking. And I'll send you some links on it. I didn't mean to come at left field.
You're saying it's a byproduct of the right wing?
Yes, and what its primary purpose seems to be to, they've already owned basically the Southern Baptist Church. Their mode of operation is to bring up divisive issues. For instance, there was the National Council on Churches. I can't remember the exact nomenclature. Well, there was a huge thing about they were responsible for this whole thing about the National Council on Churches was funding a war somewhere, and bringing up all these issues in the church, and then of course the whole gay marriage thing. It's to focus the church as a large political organization as opposed to a spiritual one, and that seems to be their mode of operation.
Well, once again, the wall crumbles separating church and state. And unfortunately, I think that as we draw near to November of next year, we're probably going to see the same batch of churches that were engaged in last time pushing their people to vote a specific way, whether it's through a voter guide that highlight their candidates and downplay the Democratic candidates or by whatever method that they use. I think the churches will still play a force in this, and that's all the more reason why the left part of the church, and there is a left part, needs to become more proactive to counterbalance this, because I think that the basic American who's not been poisoned by either the far left or the far right is basically a fair person, and I think when allowed to examine an issue and give it some thought, I think more than likely parents will come out of their decision. The left has got to become more active, and I've said this time and time again, in politics, the gay groups and that, but also the left side of the church needs to become more vocal in opposing the right side of the church, which is why I went to Fort Lauderdale and attended that press conference and spoke there. Was because I knew what was happening at Fort Lauderdale did not bode well unless it was counteracted. And as I told you on the last show, Peter, I sat in on that meeting that night when nobody knew who I was and listened to the mayor of Fort Lauderdale conspire with the Baptist ministers to run all gay people out of Fort Lauderdale.
Good Lord.
You know, the left has got to respond both politically and religiously. And that's why organizations such as mine can play such an important role in this battle, is because our third branch of our ministry is social justice. You know, and Jesus Christ was a social justice person.
Yes.
He was
yes.
a left-wing radical, okay?
Yes.
He was a libertarian. He was peace. He was love. He's all the... We try, in the order, to represent the true face of Christ rather than the false God that is propagated by the right. And we do it both on a faith level as well as a anthropological, theological basis, meaning we know, you know, what an original scripture used to say before it got changed through the centuries to what it says today, which generally is from a good thing to a negative. And the gay community specifically is probably the worst victim of that.
This is true. There's a story that I was going to get to later this evening or tomorrow night, whenever I get a chance. I was talking about the Universal the Universal Church of Christ, or United Church of Christ, I believe it is, sorry. And now, at this point, they're refusing, it's beginning to spread from the Northeast, they're refusing to actually do marriages in the church for anyone,
yeah.
straight
yeah.
or gay, as a matter of protest, which I just think is astounding.
UCC has been a leader, a good leader, in the movement for equality for the gay community. And I've known that since, 1990, when I used to, in New York, use one of their places of worship for our masses when we were getting started in a little parish on Long Island. And they have long taken the lead in this area, and you know, I applaud them for that, because, again, they are carrying out the message of Christ in that, you know, all people are equal in his eyes, and not the way that the Southern Baptists of the world put it out. And that's why Huckabee is such a worry, because we know what whether he ever states a view or not, in an area like this, we know what his position is, merely by the fact that he is a Baptist preacher.
Absolutely.
You know,
and he spoke at the Values Voter Conference down in the St. Pete, Tampa area, and confirmed to everyone there, and they all applauded that it was the marriage issue is not negotiable. I mean, above all else, this
right.
is the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... Well, you get me started on that, I'm going to get on a soapbox, Peter. The sanctity of marriage and all that, whether it's the Pope talking about, you know, marriage's purpose is to procreate children, and if you can't procreate children, you don't belong to be married, on down to the theology from the Baptist. You know, we've all heard the same facts, the 51% divorce rate. You know, people getting married for 30 days and divorcing, you know, annulments overnight. It's legion stories of why, you know, marriage is an institution that would probably be bettered in some ways by the gay community. And also we probably have our same share of divorces, but hopefully less. But all the way to back to Rome, when I answered the Pope's one theological document and said, well, what about people who can't have children? You know, what about people who decide not to have children because they can't afford it, or they don't want to bring a child into this world? Should they not be allowed to marry? You know, so marriage isn't just for procreation. You know, marriage is a state of existence and a public pronouncement of love between two people. You know, I did a lesbian wedding about 8 weeks ago, and I was really—it was very interesting because the one woman's family was Jewish, and the other woman's family was Catholic, and they're seeing two daughters up there getting married by an old Catholic archbishop, dealing with the fact that their daughters are lesbian, and then the fact that their daughters marrying you know, that other religion. And it came out quite beautiful. And everybody seemed to be pleased. All the Catholics were a little bit more uptight than the Jewish people, which really isn't surprising, I guess, because Catholics, I think, are taught at a young age to be guilty about something and unhappy about other things. But it turned out to be a beautiful ceremony. I believe that the two women will be together years from now, and this is something that should be afforded to us. And people like Huckabee, who declare this not open for negotiations, it's not going to happen, never going to happen, is discriminating against 10% of the population. You know, and under the Constitution, they can't do that. That's the whole point of this thing. All men are created equal. Either that means what it means or it doesn't mean what it means.
Yes, precisely, Archbishop. It means it or it doesn't mean it. It's really getting out of control. One of the interesting arguments they continually use is that we are trying to change the face of marriage, which is has never changed before and comes as handed down from the Bible, et cetera, et cetera. But marriage, the truth of the matter is that it's changed dramatically over the years.
Yes. The civil contract that the church recognizes and blesses, the church does not marry two people. It witnesses the exchange of vows. And you can go down to City Hall and be married and have nothing to do with the church. So it really isn't a religion issue. Okay? It is a civil rights issue. It is an issue of contract law. It's a property law issue. It's all those things that should not be withheld from the GLBT community that are being withheld by these Neanderthals. This isn't a matter of religion. And if you go back to the original purpose of marriage, it was an exchange of property from the husband to the father to the husband. And if the father wasn't alive, it was from the brother, if it was a brother, to the husband. It was an exchange of property. That's why you gave the woman, you got money back. Okay?
Well, this is absolutely true. And in fact, the families were the ones that allowed the marriage. And then you could, even if you got married in the, you know, your family, you know, say it was by the haystack somewhere on the farm, if you went to the church and said, we have committed it, the church acknowledged it. It's not like... This whole marriage business it's gotten pretty huge.
Well, the Roman Church in the Middle Ages brought marriage into its fold because it was one area of people's lives that it did not exercise control over. So it was brought into the fold of the church, made a sacrament, and then placed church rules and laws upon the state of marriage. And we've gone from that to the document issued by John Paul II in which he really vilified and trashed the gay community, gay couples, everything to which I had to respond to. And fortunately, my response was carried around the world. And it was the only major counter offensive against that whole entire document that was issued by the Pope. There was no other responses because people in a position of the religious capacity chose not to respond to it because it's the Pope. Well, I'm sorry, but the Pope's not infallible. He's fallible. He is a man. He's governed by his own set of prejudices, educational experiences, life experiences, etc. You know, and, you know, we always were taught that, you know, when they elect a Pope, the Holy Spirit is the guide in that room that makes the cardinal choose. Well, we know from JP2's election that it's run like the Democratic and Republican conventions. You know, if the Holy Spirit even acknowledged during the process, I'd be surprised.
Yes, I have to agree with you. It's really a business function of the leadership of the organization.
I'll give you my vote if you give me this. I mean, it's almost that base in some respects. And I truly wish it was the Holy Spirit that was behind it, because we would have more men like John Paul I put in office than John Paul II. And as I said before to you, when John Paul I got in, once they found out what he was really going to do, they murdered him 33 days after he was installed as Pope.
Yes.
But I fear I've gotten as far off the topic.
Well, conversation radio does tend to ramble, which is expected in the way it's supposed to work. But I am curious regarding the what we're talking about earlier. How is your fundraising going for the building fund? Obviously, you've got to raise several million dollars for these buildings are not going to be inexpensive, even though maybe conservatively built. Without you're not going into a bunch of lavishness, but no. how are you doing on the fundraising? How's that working?
Very, very badly. The total budget now that we've had land donated has dropped from $3 million to $2.7 million, and that's for all three buildings, the entire project. We have the normal sources for funding for donations for this kind of project are closed to us because we're GLBT friendly. And we've been told that by several organizations that back this kind of project and this kind of work. People who have the money that are into philanthropy are not all anti-gay, but the ones that usually concentrate in the religious realm, like the owners of the former owner of Domino's Pizza, are conservative Christians.
Yes, there was a whole thing going down in South Florida from the Domino's Pizza people.
That's
what
correct.
Was the community called?
Big Cross. He was building some gigantic cross or something.
Yeah, I
forget what it was, but he was putting a lot of dough into that. And the liberal millionaires and even the gay millionaires are not, they turned their back on faith communities, basically. In this kind of a project, I'm not saying across the board that they don't help out in causes and that they do. They absolutely do. But I once talked to a gay multi-millionaire, and I asked him whether or not he would support us. And his response was, "The church has never supported me. I'm not going to support you. Go to hell."
Oh my God!
And he could have given us $3 million. And it would have been the interest off of one of his investments that some of the money has got. And
I was just going to say we acknowledge that here. We too are we're listener supported, and there's so many people who could write a check that could fund us for 10 years and never miss it.
That's right.
But,
that's right. But they hold on to that buffalo until it bites them. So I don't know what the answer to that is, and I'm not going to troll nursing homes convincing old people to put us in their wills. I won't allow it. We make an appeal to the gay community and get very little response, and I think part of that, again, is because many gay people have been hurt and damaged by religion, so they paint religion with a broad stroke of the brush and don't realize that essentially what they're doing is they're failing to aid a part of the religion that can counter the negative side of religion.
You bring up a very good point.
The more we grow, the better position we're in to protect communities like the gay community and to go on the offensive and to... if I heard a gay person in Michigan was being unfairly prosecuted by the courts and the justice system, I would like to have the ability to be able to make sure that person has a competent attorney to protect their rights. And I would take a personal interest in that case, or California or Oregon or any state in this country, anywhere in America, I would want us to be oversight. To make sure the system is treating that gay person fairly. And that's the kind of impact we can have, but we can't get to the point where we can function like that. And I don't know what the answer is, Peter.
We were talking a few minutes ago that the Methodist Church would realize over time that, in fact, they had damaged themselves greatly by hosting the library, and it's true in a larger sense. The right wing having such a loud voice, whether it's the media that just lets them on or whether they're the ones that talk the loudest, has damaged the whole. In fact, Archbishop, even the word Christian has lost its meaning, because you have to say, what kind of Christian. When a word loses its meaning, like it means something entirely different now. It's a stamp. It's like a scarlet letter.
Right. Yes, I have to use the adjective progressive Christian when I'm talking in a non-denominational sense to a group and say, you know, I'm not a conservative Christian, I'm a progressive Christian. And it really has nothing to do with the fact that I'm a gay man. It has to do with the fact that I believe personally that I'm following the intent and the edict of the head of our church, who's Jesus Christ, in his true essence, in what his the true definition, in the true meaning of what his words meant, the words that we can tell were his and that have come down to us. So you've got to say progressive conservative, because right away when you use those two labels, a person knows which angle you're coming from.
Well, thank you. I didn't know how to phrase it. And in fact, progressive Christian is very succinct, and I think that's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, just adding a word to it, rather than to describe what you're not, to describe what you are. I like that.
Correct. And that's why I always make sure that, again, when I'm, and even when I'm speaking denominationally, I say progressive Old Catholics, because people hear that. I wish the Old Catholics didn't call themselves Old Catholics, because many people misinterpret that to mean, oh God, you're all speaking nothing but Latin, and you know, you go into your cells at night and beat each other, or you whip your back. No. Well, Old Catholics in the sense that we stick to the old doctrine of faith, the old depository of faith, which was the original doctrine of the church. That's why the bishops called themselves the Old Catholics.
Now, isn't that interesting? And you make a good point that just using the word old immediately does a pre-qualifier that you've got to be. And it's interesting, too, that old means nothing. It's the new changed church that is the oppressor versus the old church.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Correct. There's the irony of the entire situation. You assume by our name that we're the conservatives, fire and brimstone, when in fact we're not. We're the ones that reject the changes brought in by Vatican I and stuck to the original theology, that's the theology of the founding fathers of the Christian Church. And when you're talking about those fathers, you don't have to say progressive or conservative. They were what they were. And it was a little both in all of them. But that's something I constantly have to explain. And I don't think that Old Catholic means this, because it doesn't. It means this. So I wish they had called it something else, you know, the Utrecht Catholics or something. But
I'm sorry, what kind?
The city of Utrecht
in
Holland, which is the seat of the Old Catholic Church, where the declaration was issued from that declared the independence. And
the old Catholic Church was in Holland. How ignorant I am!
Yes, that's the seat of the old Catholic Church. You can find old Catholic churches in Holland, Germany, in the Netherlands, and then of course across America. But it is the smallest branch of Catholicism, and one of the reasons it is the smallest is because there's no money. If there was money, and we could educate the people as to who we were. I know that our numbers would grow. You know, we've had married couples who use birth control and don't want to feel guilty every time they go to Mass, because they do use birth control. They can come to us and get the same Mass without the guilt.
Good point. I'm wondering about the site, the osjtb.org. Have you published the information there about the new property, or will you be doing that?
We will be once it's official and I get the okay from the donor. Until then, I'm not going to put anything on the website itself. The monastery project is outlined on the website under the title Monastery Project. The figures haven't been adjusted to subtract the needed money for the land donation, but like I said, I reduced the figure by $300,000 for the land. And that leaves us $2.7 million to raise. or some generous building contractors, which is certainly, if your listeners know of anybody that's in the building industry, that you know, either personally or that they know through friends, we certainly would appreciate their getting involved in helping us establish our community in Florida. And the people that help us to achieve this goal are going to always remain special throughout the future history of this order. And we'll be on a roll of honor and prayed for on all appropriate occasions. This has got to be a project of the people, not just of we in the clergy. The church is made up of the body of Christ, and that's the laity and the clergy, and we need the laity to become involved in this.
Well, as time goes by, this program tends to make friends with more and more people. I do know a gay architect, however, he's in California. But I can pass that information along to you. Maybe, but as I hear things, I'll be you know, more than willing to share them with you.
Very much appreciate that. And one of the first things that we'll need is an architect, because I know how everything looks in my head, but you know, it's got to be reduced to those architectural drawings for the builders. You know,
exactly.
That would be probably the very next step, would be an architect to lay out the blueprints for the three buildings.
Well, I was just about to say that's a huge expenditure, and I imagine that commercial art, I don't know if this individual is commercial or home architect, but I assume commercial architecture is even more expensive.
Yes, they do tend to be. Although the monastery really is going to just be a large house, rather than the stone edifices of the Middle Ages. No crawling up on concrete steps for me on my knees. It's basically going to be a large house laid out with a square courtyard in the center of it, which would be an area of contemplation for the monks, and you know, communal dining room, kitchen, offices, that sort of thing, plus the bedrooms and bathrooms. And, you know, that's the first part, step one of that project. Then the church, there'll be a small chapel in the monastery, by the way, and then the church, which will be right next to it, connected by a breezeway to the monastery. And then, of course, the third part of the project will be the retreat center.
Well, I think this is wonderful news. Were you picking yourself up off the floor last night when you found this out?
Yeah, I started this quest in 1999. We're just about 2008. So, in all honesty, I had started to lose a little hope. And just as that started to happen, this happened. And,
well, it's great news. It is wonderful news. And
it is. Yeah.
So glad. Go ahead, please.
It is wonderful news, and it'll put us in your area. So, I mean, how much more wonderful can that be?
Well, I'm hesitant to say how, but I can say this. I could get there in well under 2 hours, like that. Well,
we'll see you at Christmas Mass in 2010 then.
I certainly hope so. Archbishop Simpson, you've been a wonderful guest, and thank you for sharing this with us. It's always great news to hear a Christmas miracle. If I think that this qualifies as one, it's what you've been your goal for so many years.
Absolutely, yes. I'm very pleased, and I thank God.
Well, don't be a stranger. We'll be in touch, and thank you so much for being on Strictly Confidential. This is Archbishop Bruce Simpson. Thank you, sir.
Good night, and Merry Christmas.
Good night to you, sir. And again, another wonderful conversation with Archbishop Bruce Simpson. And as I said, if you'd like to hear the earlier conversation, that would have been on October the 4th. Just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and you can click on the October calendar and look for the 4th. You'll see an audio link there for the first conversation we had with the Archbishop, and an amazing man. And who knew that the old Catholic Church loved us more than the new Catholic Church? You'd think it was the other way around. He's absolutely correct. So, let's see. 10:19, 10:20. tell you what, we're going to do a little short story here. It has a short audio clip to move that out of the way. And I'll just have to locate it here. And then probably what we'll do after that is go to a music track, and we'll all have a little bit of a break. Let's see if I have... Ah, here it is. It's about Mitt Romney's pink house. And this is a very short story, but I don't want you to miss this. It's, Mitt Romney was on Meet the Press over the weekend. And Tim Russert actually asked him a fairly serious question regarding illegal immigrants working on his lawn. Now, of course, the Republicans are all up in arms about the fence and all the brown people and get rid of the brown people and you... All these abortions, we've lost all of our indigenous people to do the work, and if we didn't have abortion, we would have all the people to fill the brown laborers' jobs, et cetera, and blah, blah, blah. Well, so Tim Russert, I just couldn't believe it, asks Romney what his response is. The former Massachusetts governor had illegal immigrants working on his lawn despite his public disdain for them. You know, publicly they're always raging. And the question was... he was quoting a Boston Globe article, Tim Russert was, and the article said regarding Romney, has used a landscaping company that relies heavily on workers like these, illegal Guatemalan immigrants, to maintain the grounds surrounding his pink colonial house. Okay, so you would think that a presidential candidate would respond to the portion of the question, would actually respond to the question, and they talk about either denying that there were illegal immigrants on the staff of the landscaping service, or that he didn't know it, or that he would check into it. But what he wanted to talk about was the pink house. Bob, run the pink house clip, please.
But for a decade, the governor has used a landscaping company that relies heavily on workers like these illegal Guatemalan immigrants to maintain the ground surrounding his pink colonial house.
But I have to clear up the most egregious error in that article. It said my house is pink. I would not have a pink house, I assure you.
has anybody looked up the word egregious lately? It means, well, to put it simply, and you all know this, you are all intelligent people, it means the most serious, the biggest issue, or the one that is the least fidelity to the truth. That's, you know, egregious. So it's not the illegal workers. It's that anyone would think he would live in a pink house. I swear to God, these people are so homophobic. It just, you know, and I've seen pink houses in Tallahassee. You know, there's houses that are faced with like coral shells. It's like the little broken up shells are oftentimes pink in appearance. Anyway, they. You know, you might say they shade this way or the other, but basically they're pink. And there's lots of beautiful houses that are pink. But this Republican had to make a huge deal that he did not live in a pink house. And it is the most egregious thing regarding the entire question. How dare you insinuate on the national news, Meet the Press, that I live in a pink house. Just amazing to me. We'll take a little break. Let's see. Rather than going to a break, Bob, let's just run one of our music tracks for the night. We have several. Let's see. I'm looking at the list now. I'll tell you what. Here's a good one to use. It's a Razormaid remix, and which is, of course, always fabulous. We've talked about Razormaid before. And this particular one is by Modern Talking, and you've all heard this track. Every single one of you couldn't have missed this track. It was used on radio. It was used on television. It's been used in movies. It's called You're My Heart, You're My Soul by Modern Talking. But you haven't heard it like this. This is the Razormaid remix of You're My Heart, You're My Soul. Thank you.
I keep it shining everywhere I go. You're my heart, you're my soul. I'll be holding you forever, stay with you together. You're my heart, you're my soul. Yeah, I feel that our love was wrong. You're my heart, you're my soul. That's the only thing I really know. You're my heart, you're my soul. Yeah, I feel that our love was wrong.
And that, my friends, is Modern Talking, singing You're My Heart, You're My Soul, the Disconnect. I'm sorry, not Disconnect. That's the Razormaid remix. Great remix there. And I should warn Bob, there has been a request. We're not going to do it tonight, Bob. I haven't sent it to you. But there has been a request for Funky Town. Now, oh, Lord, I believe Bob made a remark one evening that he may not be able to deal with, but this is a really, really good remix of Funky Town, Bob, and we'll have to get to it one of these weeks, because there has actually been a for real request for Funky Town. Let's see, let's do some news here, some news. Remember the stories, well, not stories, we all know it historically, the Southern Baptist Church, and the reason there is a Southern Baptist Church is because the Southern Baptist Church, of course, split off from the Big Baptist Church, sort of like AT&T and the Bells and the Baby Bells, the Baby Baptists. They split off because they felt that slavery was A-OK, and they refused to do away with that particular tradition, so they broke off and formed the Southern Baptist congregation. Well, oh, Lord, when was it? 20 years ago? 30 years ago? Who knows? There was a very quiet apology from the Southern Baptist Church. It was released, I think there wasn't a website that it was probably posted in the corner of some book. But anyway, the Southern Baptist Church actually did issue an apology to the black community for supporting slavery. And, of course, we don't have it would have been huge on the Internet had the Internets been around back then, but the Internets was not there. So it was a fairly small apology, but, you know, you realize that the Southern Baptist one day is going to have to issue an apology to the LGBT community. You know that they will have to do it one day. And, you know, you can just see these things coming. It's like being in a movie and you're watching the movie, and you know that the Indians are just around on the other cliff, and you see the cowboys riding, they're going to go around the curve, and you know the Indians are there, but the cowboys don't know that the Indians are there, and they're going to get them. But, you know, it's just a matter of perspective. Southern Baptist Church just never seems to get any perspective. But the reason I went on this long, rambling little story was to bring in Archbishop Desmond Tutu, not as a guest, but as a story. Boy, this is the night for archbishops. And how is Archbishop Desmond Tutu related to the Southern Baptist Church really apologizing to the black community? Well, in this way. Archbishop Desmond Tutu has apologized to gay people all around the world for the way they've been treated by the church. This is a true fact. Archbishop Desmond Tutu has issued an apology to gay people all around the world for the way they've been treated by the church. And, of course, the article is calling it gay, but he means LGBT. He recently criticized the Anglicans for being, quote, obsessed with homosexuality. This is a world-exclusive interview with a production company called Made in Manchester. And Tutu spoke to the creative director. Her name is Ashley Bryn, or Byron. Now, it's called the program is called The Gay Hour, and it's the only gay program on the BBC, and it's produced and made in Manchester. And it appears to me that this particular program is going to run this coming Monday evening. Now, this article isn't particularly filled with dates, so it could have run last Monday, but my expectation is that it will run this coming Monday evening, and he is speaking from Cape Town, South Africa, in the interview. And the Archbishop said, "I want to apologize to you and to all those who we in the church have persecuted. I'm sorry that we have been part of the persecution of a particular group. For me, that is quite unchristlike, and for that reason, it is unacceptable." Said, maybe even as a retired archbishop, I probably have to some extent a kind of authority. But apart from anything, let me say for myself and for anyone who might want to align themselves with me, I am sorry. I'm sorry for your hurt. I'm sorry for the rejection and for the anguish that we have caused to people such as yourselves. Now that's a statement, isn't it? From South Africa. You know, Jesus Christ, how backward can this country be when you've got stuff like this coming out of South Africa? Lord have mercy. The interview with the Archbishop can be heard this Monday night, and I do believe that means this coming Monday night, at 8 p.m., which is whatever time it is here, who knows, on BBC Manchester, which is 95.1 FM in Manchester. It's also on DAB, it's spelled D-A-B, DAB Digital Radio, or online at bbc.co.uk/Manchester. That's bbc.co.uk/Manchester. So the program will be heard up to a week after it's broadcast via the Listen Again function by clicking on the LGBT Citizen Manchester link. And the full interview will also be available at another website, which is fairly lengthy, and we'll try to bring it up. But isn't that a great Christmas present? You know, Christmas is getting better and better around here. You've got to tell you. Now, maybe we won't get a sock full of coal this year. And I'm sure that would be a great relief to the folks who live in West Virginia that there were no bags of coal gifts this year. Interesting story. You know, they won't allow us to get married. They won't allow us to get married in New York State anywhere, or pretty much anywhere else, except, of course, in Massachusetts. But New York State will not marry same-sex couples. But a federal judge has released George DeSico. I think that's the pronunciation. Now, he is 78 years old. He is a member of the Gambino crime family. He's one of the captains. George has been on house arrest, you see. And a federal judge released this mobster so that he could go down to the city hall on Staten Island and get a marriage license so he could marry his longtime girlfriend, Gail Lombardi, who is 52. He's under house arrest pending his trial for racketeering and loan sharking. The New York Post has reported his reputation as being brutal. So there you have it. A brutal crime family, 78-year-old godfather, yes, LGBT folks, No. And speaking of Larry Craig, which we were not, but we are now, you know, you'd think that he would be satisfied with one dude, or however many dudes he's done the toe-tapping bit, the wide stance bit. But he wasn't. Larry Craig, of course, still insists that he isn't gay and that he wasn't trolling for sex last summer. He's still willing to pay for dudes. In fact, not just a few dudes, but a whole damn dude ranch. Yes, sir. Craig is the ranking member of the Appropriations Subcommittee on the Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies. And so before he's being forced to step down after a sex scandal, assuming he steps down, he seems to just linger on and on. He managed to get an earmark spending in the omnibus spending bill that allocated $1.6 million to Idaho's Gold Creek Ranch, which is, wait for it, as Bob would say, a dude ranch. It's absolutely true. You can't make this stuff up. Now, the money would be used as part of a USDA Forest Service, what's called a Forest Legacy Program, and it's for a 640-acre parcel of land in northern Idaho that's feeling the pressure of development. And get this, the project was requested by President Bush. So you know there's something evil afoot. If President Bush has requested $1.6 million, rather, and he's for anything in this country, you can be sure it's nefarious. You can be sure that someone is benefiting by it. Absolutely. So I wonder what the real reason, that somebody must own it, or one of his brother-in-laws is going to be, you know, have a little disco there. Who knows what it's going to be? But in any case, that ran through Craig. So helping the dude ranch is just one of the things Craig has been doing since getting back from his little scandal. He has assumed a fairly high profile since the scandal broke, and he's talking on the floor in favor of an amendment limiting eminent domain. Now, the eminent domain thing failed, but it gave the other GOPers, including Senators Wayne Allard and Sam Brownback, of course, who first were condemning Craig, it gave them the opportunity to praise him from the Senate floor. Lord, how they rewrite history! You'll choke on it. Brownback went as far as to liken Craig's efforts to the founding fathers, and invoked the words of Thomas Jefferson. Yes, he did in his praise to Wide Stance Craig. This was praising Craig for his. The amendment limiting eminent domain, which did not pass, but it did give Brownback and another the forum to praise him. Praise him, praise him, all you little children. God, how disgusting can these people get? So it's back to business as usual. He also secured a $7.5 million earmark for the 2009 Special Olympics International Games to be held in Idaho. And he will present them in the Senate in January 2009. I guess he thinks he's going to be there. Says he's going to work for Idaho well beyond that as a private citizen. Coming to a men's room near you, Larry Craig. Just thought you might want to know about that little story. And, oh yeah, got to tell you about this. It's only, 6 days, did I say, left in the war on Christmas, so you really need to know about this. Let's see, the fundies. Now, if you'll recall, the fundies are very angry. You know, one day they love Walmart, it's all American, and the next day they hate it. One day they love Ford, and the next day they hate it. You know how these edicts typically emanate from the, Association of the Family, one of those organizations. So anyway, Walmart is in a lot of trouble with them for, the homo agenda, they're calling it, and participating in the war on Christmas. I mean, those are two huge strikes, you know, for a company like Walmart, but the fundamentalists have shaken that off. They are hitting up Walmart big time for the latest Christmas toy, a talking toy Jesus. Now, this toy utters Bible stories and scriptures, and despite the fact that they're angry, the fundamentalists at Target and Walmart, by the way, they're furious at both. They are cleaning out the stores. The Let's see. Much has been written. Scarce. Okay, the toy is very scarce this season because they basically sold out. Last week, Walmart sold out of the toy. It's called a Talking Jesus Messenger, a faith doll. And it is 13 inches high. And it is a Caucasian Jesus with Caucasian blue eyes and Caucasian blonde hair. And it's made by a company called One to Believe in Valencia, California. Now, One to Believe also sells through Target and Walmart other Bible action figures such as Samson and Goliath, and these are spirit warriors. Now, I have to tell you, and I've seen the pictures. Now, the Jesus doll is like the bearded Caucasian Jesus, and he's in a white robe, and it's all very, you know, nothing overt. So I have to contrast it with the Samson spirit warrior and Goliath. These are taken out of a homosexual erotica, I got to tell you. Rippling, huge muscles and tight, trim waists and rippled muscles. And you could just practically see the sweat rolling off these two as they battle together. So anyway, Samson's spirit warrior is one of the strongest men who ever lived, as it tells you in the box. Samson was used by God to fight against the enemies and has captivated the tale of his amazing deed for centuries. That doesn't make much sense, but that's what it says. It says, the colorful and richly detailed figure brings to life the Bible story of the Samson character that kids can play and move. I've got no problem with, a Samson toy for kids, or even that it speaks Bible, but it's the obvious homoerotic quality of Samson and Goliath and the Caucasian version of Jesus. These things really just need to go away. I'm really tired of it. It says Samson was the one who caught over 300 foxes all by himself and killed a lion with his bare hands and fended off 30 soldiers. Delightful blah, 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 ancient biblical stories. And the Goliath doll is a giant Philistine warrior. Honey, he is butch as they come. Goliath stood over 9 feet tall, and sometimes one battles with just his fierce looks. Ooh, daddy. His enemies would take one look at Goliath and run away. So this one is a richly detailed figure that brings the colorful Bible stories to life with a Goliath character. You know, this ranks right up there with the, what were those Easter eggs that I did? Some sort of the resurrection Easter eggs. There was a bit a while back, but I think it was not last Easter, but the Easter before, that Walmart sold the resurrection Easter egg kit, and you could make up your resurrection Easter egg. But you see, they recall that because one of the eggs was the resurrection egg. You know, I'm sorry, but how do you take a faith seriously with, I remember Bob brought up a good while back. Remember the pajamas, the pajamas that you could wear, the armor, what is it, the belt of truth and the sword, or the sword of truth and I can't recall exactly, but anyway, it's the way you should gird yourself to resist Satan. Anyway, though, so you had these PJs and they had like, you could be like, the sword of truth and whatever. So anyway, the company called One to Believe says, we feel blessed that the toys are now in the hands of thousands of children. Oh, honey, I know you do. You've made a couple of million off that, teaching them the Word of God. We knew that the toys would be a great Christmas gift, but to see them sell so well before the Christmas buying season proves that parents want alternatives in the toy aisle. Can you imagine how many disappointed boys and girls that really wanted a Nintendo? And they got a Jesus doll. And speaking of kids, I don't want to defend the guy because he murdered innocent children. But the Columbine, the kid, the nutcase over, that's his name, the one in Arapahoe County who carried out the attacks at the two religious organizations. He killed 4 people and injured several others. You remember, this is just recent news. I think his name is Matthew Murray. And he fatally shot 2 sisters, and then at the other location, he got in a battle with a security guard, and he killed himself. He also killed a Tiffany and a fellow named Philip. And regardless of whether or not they were involved with Focus in the Family or whatever, that doesn't invoke the death sentence. But, You know, my heart kind of goes out to this kid in a way. You know, he talks about Marilyn Manson, and that was his own, you know, he loved it, and you know, all the sick, twisted things that the Columbine axe murders with an AK-47 talk about. But there are actually 65, thank you, Bob. Bob points out that those were the Armor of God pajamas I was trying to say earlier. There are actually 65 pages of his blog. 65 pages, if I had printed them, the word count added up to 65 pages, that of things he has written over a long period of time. And I tell you what, this man was just, or boy, was just outraged with the church. He talks about the hypocrisy. He talks about how stupid can these people be to believe all these things. You see, this is a young man who was totally wrapped up in it. He's in Denver. He was homeschooled, if I'm not mistaken. He was forced to go to a school that he wasn't particularly popular in. The other kids, you know, dissed him. You know, these are all things that kids should be able to cope with and not kill anybody. And I don't mean to defend him, but I do want to point out to you that, you know, had that kid come across the Head On Radio Network and maybe heard the other side of the story, it would have helped to defuse that bomb. It's funny how the truth can make some of these situations just go away. He says in one of his posts, "All I found in Christianity was hate, abuse, both sexual and physical, psychological and emotional." He said he found hypocrisies and he found lies. And then there's other posts that, how can these people be so stupid? I can't believe that. So he was alone. So it seemed like he was like involved in his own spiritual battle against the empire of Christianity without ever realizing there was another side of the coin. And I think it's a shame, because I think if he had realized, it's a shame. What you people have done to your children in the name of God, God help you. I got to tell you. God help you. There's a bunch of other news, but there's another song I want to play for you. I believe we have time for it. This particular song, have you ever seen a movie called Breakfast on Pluto? If you haven't, do. It is a wonderful LGBT movie. It's called Breakfast on Pluto. As soon as I saw it, I went to Amazon.com and ordered the soundtrack, because there's so many great tracks in there. One of the tracks is called Sugar Baby Love. Now, the track that's played in the movie is only like 3 minutes long. It's the radio version, of course. I loved it. I just loved it. I bought the Breakfast on Pluto CD soundtrack just because I love that track. It's by the Rubettes. And sure enough, I searched for years, and I wandered through the wilderness, and finally came across of the dance floor extended version of Sugar Baby Love, and I think it's fabulous. Bought a whole CD for this. It's by the Rubettes. Bob, run that, please. Yes, I know that track is terribly gay. That's so gay, but I just can't resist myself. I think it's fabulous. I just like that. Anyway, Bob pointed out to me, by the way, in production chat, the pajamas we were talking about, you can buy those or at least look at them and be horrified. They're at www.armorofgodpjs.com, and PJs is spelled PJS. So it's armorofgodpjs.com if you'd like to have a look at the Armor of God pajamas. Very briefly, we're running out of time. I want to give you a contrast to the Desmond Tutu apologizing. We also have from the American side of the ocean, the Anglican Church is saying that the church needs to repent for creating turmoil in the church by their pro-gay support, and that several bishops have attended a meeting in North Carolina and have vowed to block the appointment of any openly gay pastors because it's doing considerable damage to the church, and they're saying that basically we're just not ready for it, et cetera, et cetera. So as we close, my name is Peter Godbold. This has been Strictly Confidential. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us for the horn section. Tonight, myself and Bob Kincaid and John Fox will be in the host forum called the horn section, which runs from 11 till midnight, followed by John Fox show All Foxed Up, which begins at midnight. And so in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.
The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.